So this is how we do it. We go, welcome to the Matthew Aaron Show.
Okay.
I am Matthew Aaron.
And we fuck up.
www.thematthewaaronshow.com, at Matt Aaron Show on Twitter. Facebook, you can like us by going to the search bar, type in the Matthew Aaron Show, and then you click like. Stitcher, you go to the Matthew Aaron Show. iTunes, you can find us there as well. Leave your pithy comments. Go ahead, Lee, with your no bloviating. Thank you. No bloviating. Today, we're going to be joined by Reuben Fleischer here at Taste Chicago on 603 North Hollywood Way in Burbank, California. Joe Montana's restaurant, best deep dish in town. Lee Capreas, please introduce yourself again.
Hello.
No?
Lee Capreas, hello.
Okay.
There's my...
Go ahead, Hillary. You can introduce yourself. And then we'll go back talking about your Patriots.
Oh, yes. Hi, Hillary Barraford.
Better now? Better? Are we good? Okay,
we
thumbs up now.
It was even better
the
second time.
No, we did it right this time.
There was less enthusiasm, but more...
It's like when you're acting, and you know how everyone... I was reading Jeff Bridges' book today, and they're talking about Sidney Lumet did like a ton of rehearsals for when he would do his movies.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And some directors don't like doing rehearsals because they feel like they don't get the spontaneity. So when you're working with John Sayle, a lot of rehearsal, no rehearsal?
No rehearsal, and he
so
only
he
does
likes
like,
it in the moment kind of thing.
Yes, and only does maybe 2-3 takes max.
Yeah, like Billy Friedkin.
That's it.
Two, three takes.
Out, done, can't fix it, can't change it, moving on.
He wants the in-the-moment response.
The reaction.
Yeah, he wants the reaction.
He loves reactions.
Okay, well, Sidney Lumet was a little different. He would like to rehearse and, like, rehearse a lot. And when you do that, you kind of have to make it fresh again somehow.
Yeah.
So the thing is, in my mind, and we were talking about this when you and I were having coffee, in my mind, you have to kind of, like, empty your mind. You have to kind of, like, be in the moment and forget all the bullshit and say, fuck it.
Well, you have to.
It's like you never did those rehearsals,
right.
Though.
Well, I think it's Meryl Streep who talks about like erasing.
Meryl, is that what you just call her?
No,
Meryl, right?
Mare and I.
Yeah.
No, but she erases the last take. So every time she goes into it, she erases whatever she just did, and it's like she's starting from ground zero.
Here's what I heard about Meryl. I heard between takes she likes chattering up and talking a lot and bullshitting and making jokes.
I like that.
Because it takes her away from the last take.
Uh-huh.
So I think that's her method of doing what you're saying, where she erases the last take. The way Meryl erases the last take is she pretends like she's not even on a film set anymore.
I give a director 7 takes. If he can't get it, we're done with that scene.
Michael Caine, true story, I saw him on Charlie Rose, and Michael Caine was talking about how he gives a director 3 takes, and then he's done.
Wow.
Because Michael goes, I'm not going to do it any differently. I'm basically just playing myself in every movie.
Oh,
I don't
Michael.
Know what you're looking for. But he made a good point about it. He's like, it's not going to be any different.
Playing himself.
Every actor is playing himself in
Michael,
every movie.
Michael pretty much, but a lot of actors don't like saying that because then what's the point of their job? In their mind.
Well,
it's
they can
not
just turn
too
it off.
Brando of you
but
to
what
be
I like about,
I play myself in every movie.
But he's that guy that is not afraid to say, yeah, I was in that movie and it was a piece of shit and I needed the money.
Hey, Jaws 4.
Yeah, well, he does.
Jaws
I
Revenge,
love, yeah.
Where he missed his, he wow. missed, he, could you imagine, you're an actress, Hillary.
Yeah.
You're nominated for an Oscar and you can't be there because you're working on Transformers 7 and you win the Oscar. Michael Caine missed picking up his Oscar at the ceremony because he was filming Jaws 4.
Wow.
True story.
He'll only give them 3 takes, but he won't walk off a set. He's working on to pick up
yeah,
an Oscar.
I love that, yeah.
No, no.
That's great.
He goes, I have my love for Lorraine Gary here. I have to stay. Lorraine. Lorraine needs me.
Lorraine and I are shooting a very important scene, and I can't make it to the... I can't.
He must hate that, though. That, would that be the worst thing ever to happen to you? That you couldn't collect your Oscar, Hillary, because you're filming a terrible movie?
Well, Oscars...
Yeah, yes.
But
a terrible movie.
But that's
still a
part
job.
Of taking the
hey,
money.
It's a job.
You took the money, so that's a consequence,
Oscars
I guess.
Don't mean everything to
I just
actor,
love
so.
How in the 80s, while the Oscars were going on, there were things being filmed. Like, people didn't care.
Yeah.
Like, nowadays, from January to April, nothing happens. Nothing. And everyone's like, what happens in L.A. between January and April?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Right.
People go to award shows, and that's it.
That's it.
They
that's
party.
It.
That's it. I don't even know what movies are filming right now.
They kill time at the summer house between award shows.
Yeah, at the summer home. Yeah.
Cabo.
So I guarantee you, Reuben Fleischer's coming in like 20 minutes, and I guarantee you, I want you to stick around for a few minutes to tell Ruben about what you're doing Friday.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Since it's Gangster Squad, a relayed ode.
It's Gangster Squad week. I mean, it's
it is, I guess.
It launches on Friday. I mean,
I guarantee you Ruben's not doing a movie in the next 3 months.
By the way,
you want to roll the dice on that one?
When you go to the Grove,
no.
They've got like ads for the movie literally everywhere.
Everywhere.
You can look. But
everywhere.
It's for one, you know, maybe two or three different movies, guys. You got enough space. Like
Warner Brothers is spending a shitload of money on P&A, I see.
Well, no, but they always do that at the Grove.
I mean, everywhere you go, you see a Gangster Squad billboard. But Caesar told me that, like, in the Midwest, his friends, they haven't seen any previews or anything.
Really?
Right? For Gangster Squad? But, like, not like in L.A., where you see it everywhere. And you know what's weird? If I'm Warner Brothers, it's an L.A. movie.
It's
L.A.
It's a Hollywood movie.
So why would you have to do tons of promoting in L.A.? Wouldn't you want to take that money and promote it elsewhere? Because you know you're going to get the L.A. people to go see it regardless. By the way, everyone in L.A. sees movies for free anyways.
That's
right.
True.
Right.
Everyone goes to the screenings.
The screenings.
Those top secret screenings. They're so hard to get into. Yeah.
Well, everyone in L.A., though, that's how they start talking about the movie, and that's how it gets spread across the country. I mean, LA,
oh, is that what they convince everybody out here? Do they convince everyone in L.A. that they're so important that it's their chatter that gets the rest of the country going?
I think
sometimes
you may be right about that.
I don't know. I think that's horseshit.
I don't know, though.
Oh,
I do.
Your judgment, though.
I do.
You're my theory. I don't know.
You know what? You're from Boston.
Yeah.
Be from Boston for a moment. Take Hillary L.A. out of the picture for a moment.
I'd start swearing a lot.
Hillary Boston. You can swear as much as you want. Okay. Hillary Boston.
Yes.
If you heard some douchebag from L.A. tell you a movie was great, what would you tell him?
And just like, how would Tom Brady handle this?
Right.
Oh, no. I would be like, fuck that dude.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Right. And that's my point.
But I'd be talking about fucking that dude. I'd be talking about the movie.
It would be on my radar. About the movie. But do you even hear anything back in Boston from L.A.? Is there like a courier wire I don't know about that?
It's a carrier pigeon. Yeah, just for Boston.
Your judgment, although, it might be a little bit in question because you went to a fondue restaurant at the Grove.
No, I didn't go to a fondue restaurant.
All right,
I'd rather have gone to a fondue restaurant and used Ron Jeremy's.
You don't have to name the place, but what was it that was? I don't mean to get off.
Probably
topic,
the melting pot.
What was bad?
It was a pie joint.
Oh, okay.
It was a pie joint. I got a calzone.
Okay.
Inside the calzone was about 3 pounds of ricotta cheese, and I said pepperoni as well, you know, pepperoni as well, and there was no pepperoni. And by the way, yes, there are calzones with ricotta cheese, but people know the best way to make a calzone is make a pizza and you fucking fold it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Don't complicate it.
What's with this ricotta cheese nonsense?
I don't know.
I'll tell you one place you won't get ricotta cheese on your pizza. Taste Chicago.
Well played.
That's how good I am. Yeah. That's why I have a pilot. Okay? Right there.
Oh.
Right there. Boom. Right there. Best mozzarella in town. That's right. Best mozzarella in town. You can also get Chicago dogs here, Maxwell Street Polishes. I think this is the only place in L.A., not to blow Joe too much here, but I think Taste Chicago is the only place in L.A. outside of Pink's, which is bullshit.
Yeah, that.
Outside of bullshit Pink's where you can get a legit Maxwell Street.
Yes.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Okay.
And by the way, your judgment is not in question anymore. Took a little bit of balls to talk shit about Pink's. I got to give it up.
Pink's is bullshit.
That will get you blacklisted.
It kind of is. And it's not like
it's not the worst food ever.
Like our fans
but it's
are
overpriced
like, yeah, unseat that dynasty.
Special. Yeah, right.
Yeah, right.
Right.
I don't think you're going to go up against them. They've been around for what, 90 years?
Oh, I'll go up against
crazy.
Them. Oh, I'll lose, but I'll go
but
up
see,
against
the
them.
The thing is, though, but see, that's the problem, though. And somehow we always get to food, but all these things,
people
these places
love talking
have
about
in a restaurant.
People honor these places in this town just because they've been around
I
for
know.
60 years.
I like
not because
the,
they're good.
What's the place in Toluca Lake by the golf course?
Big Boy. Bob's Big
not,
Boy.
Well, Bob's too. Bob's is only average.
It's not good.
It's average.
No, it's not good.
Ooh.
Are you kidding?
Yeah, it's
oh,
not
God.
Good. It's not good. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. You're right. I'm just saying it's average to be nice.
But it has a giant hamburger.
You know why I'm saying it's average? It's open 24 hours and I can go sit there for a while.
Yeah.
That's about it. If it wasn't open 24 hours, I'd say it's shit. And I do like the car show. But the other place, the steak joint on Linkersham. by Warner Brothers. The old Chop House.
Smokehouse. It's not that good.
Not good.
No.
Not
and
good.
I, you know what? And I continue.
Frank and Musso's.
I continue to eat there for the atmosphere. It's just such a cool place.
What atmosphere? It's dark.
Oh,
that's the atmosphere.
That rapist atmosphere.
It's dark. Is what guys are going for.
Listen,
there.
It's dark. It's old. It smells like disinfectant.
Mm.
And like you like the smell of disinfectant. Yeah. I have kind of a sick enjoyment of shitty food in certain contexts,
but not pinks.
Well, there's no context for that. You're on a street.
When you moved here, Hillary, what were the places that you were told you had to go to, and were you like disappointed? Was Pink's one of them? And you went to Pink's, and you stood in a half an hour to an hour long line.
I, first of all, never went to Pink's. I've never been
to Pink's. You've never been.
I've had Pink's hot dogs other places.
On sets and stuff, right?
I refuse to sit in that godforsaken line at Pink's. There's just no way. There's no way I'm doing that.
How's a Pink's hot dog on a set? Because I had it once at the Comedy Store, and it was just like, I thought they got hot dogs from Ralph's
and put them in a steamer.
No, John did not provide Pink's. No, John, we were shooting in the Deep Valley for that movie. There was no...
Is he a vegetarian?
No, he's not a vegetarian.
Okay. No.
But no, yeah.
Not a veggie. Not
I feel
a veggie
like if you don't wait in line 45 minutes for it, it loses its luster.
I feel like if I wait
if
45
wait
minutes in line for it and then I taste it and it's $8 an average, it's not only now $8 an average, it's $8 a suck.
But see, that's the thing.
Because I stood 45 minutes
People see the line and they think, I have to wait in that line, it's probably
that's
good.
That's an LA mentality.
But that's everywhere you go.
But the biggest place it's at is L.A.
L.A., but like...
Because it's with the shittiest joint.
No, but they
have Chicago, when there's a line out the door, or Boston on the north side or whatever, when there's a line out the door, usually the place is decent.
Oh, man.
Decent.
Hot dogs, wait in line.
Hot dogs is good.
It's a hot dog.
It's good, though.
Yeah.
And you don't go to hot dogs for the hot dog. You go to hot dogs for the sauce.
Kuma's,
it's like the foie gras.
Overrated.
You go for the foie gras.
Yeah, you go for the duck fries.
Right, the duck fries.
For the toppings.
Kuma's overrated, but it's overrated because of the wait and the line.
Yes.
If there was no wait, no line, you'd be like, this is good.
That's true. Okay.
The difference is Pink's. If there was no line, it'd still be average.
True.
Yeah.
To no good.
It would still be Pink's at the end of the day.
Yeah, it would still be Pink's. Like in Boston, when there's lines out the door, aren't they usually for legit joints?
Yeah, Mike's Pastry in the North End. That's a damn good reason.
And I mean, that's good.
Clinton used to go there.
Mike's Pastry's good.
George Clinton used to go there?
Yeah. Oh, my God. George, he did. Yeah.
All the time, huh? Was he doing some funk?
Always.
It's great.
Love that North End.
A Cake Boss in New York. Line out
Same
the door.
Thing.
Yeah, because it's on TV. No, because the cakes are great. That's why. That's why I really.
They're good cakes.
I feel like I should go to Pink's though, because little known fact: when I was little, I had a childhood dream of owning a hot dog stand in Hollywood.
I know people that have had those dreams, and they don't work out too well.
I know.
My dad is always
childhood dreams of hot dog stands.
I reached for the hot dog stars, and it landed elsewhere.
Yeah, yeah. You don't want to do it in Hollywood.
Every time I talk
to
my dad,
in that Deep Valley, you put a hot dog.
Yeah. He goes, "Is there anywhere where you can get a Vienna beef style Chicago play?" I'm like, "Yeah, but it's usually not that good." Well, what if you sent that? You'd make a killing. And I go, "I don't know about that."
No,
really.
I don't know about that either.
Because this is a environment where we applaud the imitation and the real thing is hissed.
Right.
Oh.
Right.
I'm sorry.
And that's the nice thing about Taste Chicago is Joe tries to do it legit.
I'm a comic.
He's got the Vienna beef.
Yes.
He's got the Vienna beef here. Oh, hi there. Hello.
Hello.
Anna's here. Okay. All right. All right. Anna with 42 West. She's obviously waiting on Ruben. She's not here for me. That's for sure.
She might be.
Partly for me. Anna doesn't want to see me unless it's for business.
Hillary's like, oh, come now. It's probably for me.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, under my breath. Yeah, that's exactly
what I said. That's true. She's in a new John Sayle movie. You're going to be wanting to work with her soon.
Well,
you're going
to
need
a
publicist.
Aaron. Thank you very much.
You're going to need to be at 42 West. Let's make this little love in here.
Obviously.
Yeah, you could take them around her and Hector Elizondo, and they'll be too good to do my show at that point. No, that's how it works. Here's how it works in Hollywood. I connect people, and then all of a sudden, they're too big to associate with me.
Yeah.
You should connect yourself.
Pitfall.
And I don't get 10%.
Yeah, right.
I get 10% enough.
We should connect ourselves. We'll get somewhere.
Yeah, we should. We should start doing that.
Yeah.
Let's see. What else is going on?
It comes off weird.
What? Connect ourselves?
Yeah, connecting yourself.
Is it a little gay?
Yeah, a little bit.
Somewhat gay?
Almost as gay as sucking cheese off another man. dick.
Yeah. Listen, it had to be better than this ricotta ball I got.
Oh.
And by the way, not even fresh ricotta. May I just say,
from a plastic
not fresh
container.
It had to be.
Yeah.
It had to be.
Kraft ricotta.
Yeah, because it wasn't. It didn't have that moisture, that texture to it. It was like you know, bits and pieces of ricotta. Like if you opened it up, ricotta would spread everywhere. Now everyone knows legit ricotta. If you open it up, it'll kind of stick together
right.
because it's got that moisture and that texture.
Let me ask you, do you like, for your cannoli, do you like a ricotta cannoli? Or do you like
I'm a diabetic, can't have
version?
No
oh,
cannoli. But I will tell you this, when I ate cannolis, I did like the ricotta cannoli.
Yeah, me too.
It's
yeah.
good. I don't know where you get good mascarpone around here, though.
That's a good question. There's a couple delis. I'll tell you where you get good mascarpone.
Porto's?
San Francisco.
Oh, yeah.
No, not Porto's. Porto's is good, though.
Delish.
Love Porto's.
You still didn't eat there, though, right?
No, not yet.
So you're reviewing their coffee. Their Folgers is fantastic.
I have sampled the pastries at various
times. Oh, that's right. You told me the pastries. What kind of pastry did you get at Porto's? The cupcakes? Have you done the cupcakes yet?
Cupcakes.
Porto's? What?
Napoleon.
There you go. There you go.
I thought that was Werner Herzog that just walked out.
Werner is the bad guy in Jack Reacher.
Yes, I know.
And he is surprisingly solid.
He's acted before.
Yeah, I know he has, but this role is a little. Here's the thing. You can probably tell where Werner started doing the movie and finished doing the movie because there's scenes where he overacts badly.
Yeah, but.
And then there's scenes where he's dead on the money. And I'm assuming the overacting probably took place early in shooting.
I can't fault
That's
him
not totally his
too
fault.
Much. He threw himself into the project.
Here comes an actor's point
that's
of view.
He loves
that's
that is
a, that's,
not
that's,
his
that's,
he loves
that's
America.
On a director
Are
too.
You saying that's Chris McQuarrie? I do not think so. Not Chris. Not my boy.
Oh no.
I love Chris McQuarrie. He's great.
I've come into your house and insulted you.
Let me tell you why I like Jack Reacher. Why I enjoyed it. It was everything. First of all, Alex Cross should have been.
Okay. Wow.
Alex Cross, by the way, the most awful garbage I've seen
is
all year.
Is that your Razzie's pick?
And I hope you're not, you don't represent Alex Cross. Okay, then you don't need to cover your ears. Garbage.
Ooh.
Complete, utter garbage. Jack Reacher, everything it should have been. It was a fun 90s-style action movie. It's totally a studio movie, but it's fun. It's fun.
How's Cruise?
It's great, as always. He's always great. I mean, listen, Tom gets a bad rap for stuff outside of movie making. It's outside of movie making. Inside movie making, he's probably one of the top actors going.
He's
think
solid.
He's really good.
He still draws,
he's really
draws numbers. He still pulls
There's,
in the...
Yeah.
And you got to give Tom this. He's got a lot of balls because he'll do a lot of roles that he, on paper, doesn't fit in.
He's known for that.
Yeah.
Being against type.
Last Samurai.
Yeah.
This movie. In the books, the guy's 6'5".
Right.
Really?
Well, we know Tom's not. And, you know, so, I mean, he definitely goes out on a limb. I'll give him that. And he now follows me on Twitter, so I cannot say anything negative. Thank you, Tom. Thank
or
you.
His social media girl
we
follows.
That's
negative.
Where it is.
We weren't saying negative shit about him, though, before.
I wasn't.
No, we
I
like
wasn't.
Him on the show.
Yeah, yeah, we're supporters of Tom.
Pro Tom?
Yeah, we're supporters of Tom Cruise.
You're also pro Katie or just pro Tom?
Well, we don't.
How does
don't,
the show politics work here? Do
I don't get
sides?
Involved in people's personal affairs.
No, okay.
Affairs
could,
of the heart or
so
affairs
see,
of the heart.
You could see that we talk about people in a way that is not generally the way other people in the industry talk about people. But,
and Tom Cruise has more power than Katie, so.
But
no, I'm just kidding.
Well,
but we also give people their due when we think they're worthy of, you know, getting their due.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So see Jack Reacher.
Okay.
I saw Zero Dark Thirty as well. I'm not going to talk too much about it because people need to still see it.
Don't give me a spoiler alert or anything.
No, I'm not.
I want to know how it ends.
It's a 3-star. Yeah, it's a 3-star movie in a 4-star world, though.
Ooh.
It's good. I don't know.
You're really good at the bites.
Yeah.
At the little. I like that.
Yeah.
You're good.
It's good.
You're getting better.
It's not great.
Is Chastain not amazing? I mean, I would
she
think
is.
That she would
she
play
is,
that
but
role.
At certain points, you're very unsympathetic to her character. Mm. There's like no sympathy because, and I know this is what they were going for, and I get why they did it. And if it was a man, people would be like, oh, what a badass, and he didn't put up with any shit.
Right.
And when it's a woman, you're like, what a bitch. Right. Well, in this case, yes, I kind of had that. If I'm going to be honest with you, yes. She's so much not a woman in the film.
Hmm.
No stereotypes of being a woman, other than when she kind of uses sexual overtures to get her way in one or two scenes.
Wow.
Which, I don't know if that was on purpose or not. I'm interested in that. Yeah, she's totally not a woman otherwise, and you're kind of like, what a bitch sometimes. At
Got
least
it.
I'm being honest.
No, yeah.
At least I'm being honest.
I didn't see the movie.
And then the other thing is, you know, torture scenes. The whole war in general, I was just very much against.
Yeah.
So while people are there rooting for America, I'm just there going, boy, this was all pointless.
Yeah. There's people creaming over torture.
Yeah. I just thought
that's
the whole...
one of my favorite verbs, by the way.
Since,
it's a hard movie to judge...
24 is not on TV anymore.
Right. It's a hard movie to judge from a political point of view because everyone has different politics. From a creative point of view, it's about 40 minutes too long. It wears.
Oh.
It wears.
Well, every movie right now is 40 minutes too long.
That being said, I love Catherine Bigelow. Mm. It's a good movie.
All right.
It is a
I'm
good movie.
I'm excited for it. I want to see it.
It is a good movie. And I'll tell you this. I'll at least, here's how you know it's a good movie. I'll at least be talking about it for a long time. It will be in the social media and America's lexicon for a long time.
Right.
People are going to be gossiping about it.
People maybe in other parts of the country might hear an L.A. guy talking about
I don't
Zero
think so.
Dark 30.
I'm not an L.A. guy. Let's not get crazy. Let's not get crazy. I still carry my Illinois driver's license on
Whoa.
Me everywhere.
Really?
Yep. That's how I roll.
I got mine in California just because.
Oh, I got my California license. I just never use it.
Just because on the old license I hated the picture so much. On the Illinois license, it looks like I'm suffering from a combination of sunburn and jaundice somehow.
Whoa.
Now with the California, it's just jaundice.
No, now it's just my ugly skin.
Oh.
Nowhere to hide.
Oh, very good, very good. And I saw Gangster Squad last night, which we're going to be talking about with Ruben when he comes in, and you're going to that thing Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that thing before Ruben comes on so we don't have to go over 10 minutes of it.
Yeah. So actually the guy who originally
Paul
Lieberman, who wrote the book for Gangster Squad, he used to work, I think, in L.A. for the L.A. Times
mm-hmm.
back in the day.
That's right, L.A.
He,
Times.
He went to Williams College back in Massachusetts.
Williams.
Where I went.
That's where my buddy went. I've been around that campus.
Saying John Sayles went
And
there.
John Sayles also went to Williams, class of 72. So Paul Lieberman is in town. He's going to do a little Williams alumni event on Friday talking about the genesis of the book.
Where
and
does
how
a Williams alumni
out.
Event take place? Where do they get you people together to have your clam chowder and whatever else you do?
We don't do so much clam chowder, but...
Oh, no? Okay.
They're just constantly...
Chowder.
We call it a networking group with a drinking problem.
Chatter.
But where do you guys get together? Is there, like, Boston joints out here that you go?
Yeah. No, Boston joints.
No, there's no Boston joints.
Williams,
no one cares.
Williams is in the Berkshires. That is so far removed from Boston. That is more Vermont, New York.
Well,
that is boondock.
Okay, is there a Vermont joint that you guys get together out here?
I had to go
chocolate?
Out of the way to find a place to eat, though. We were on the campus, and we went into this, like...
At Williams?
Yeah, near the campus, but we went into this really white-collar-looking restaurant, and, like, we stepped in looking the way we looked, and, like... It was like something out of a movie. Like, you could hear a needle being pulled off a record. Like, 100 limousine liberals just looked at us like, what are you doing here? Like, it was, like, really...
I like that.
Well,
it's kind of funny.
I like the experience.
The
part.
Food looked so good, though. Oh, man.
Was the food good at Williams?
Yeah.
It's okay.
Back
they do
to
okay.
Food.
Well,
back
you
to
know,
food.
The Williamstown Theater Festival is there. So every summer they have this influx of really huge... celebrities that come and just want to do good theater.
You
so.
Weren't an actress in college,
no,
though,
I wasn't.
Were you?
No, I wasn't. I mean,
yeah, you got, like, discovered or something.
No.
You're fucking weird.
No, I was an English major. I'm a.
Yeah, but weren't you, like, a model first or something? I did my reading up on you. Calm down.
You did.
Oh,
wow.
I did.
You've done your research.
I've done my research.
I wasn't even scheduled to do this show, and you did your research, so.
The day after I met you, I was flying out of town.
Hillary's cool.
I was bored out of my mind. You posted something on Facebook, and
As
I go...
I do.
I want to know more about Hillary. So I did my Googling.
Yeah.
And I know quite a bit about you now, sweetheart.
Ooh, well then.
Model first?
Actually, no.
Were you at Ford?
The first thing I ever did was an acting gig.
It was an acting gig?
And barely. I use that term loosely because I was a featured extra in Moonlight Mile, which shot in Boston.
Oh,
oh
hey. Jake Gyllenhaal,
yeah,
Susan
Jake
Sarandon,
Gyllenhaal,
and Dusty
that
Hoff.
Whole thing.
Cool.
And I was a bride. I was a 1970s bride. And, and I just fell in love with production.
You're
and
not
I was
the
like,
girl
wanna...
that dies, are you?
No. I'm not.
Well, I don't know. I don't know.
I'm just the harsh reminder that...
You're the harsh
that
reminder?
That Jake will never get married like I am in the movie. But yeah.
So that was your big break. How'd you get that?
That's not even a big break.
Did you just like sign up for it?
My modeling agency sent me.
I knew you were at a modeling agency. What modeling agency?
Oh God, what was it called? I don't even remember anymore.
Because we have Ford in Chicago.
No,
I don't know
was,
if that's
it,
everywhere.
It was Boston. It was a Boston thing. It was like,
yeah,
you know,
it was a
smaller
Boston
boutique
thing.
Boston agency. Nothing.
Where do you do modeling in Boston? Where do they send you? JCPenney's, Sears.
Yeah, basically.
Where do you do modeling in Chicago? Where it's like. Chicago, you got to just be the before model.
All the boutiques,
model.
All the boutiques.
Yeah,
right.
You're not walking the catwalk in Milan, that's for sure. Like,
you know,
you're just kind of like...
It's the Midwest, so you got to be the before model.
Yeah, the before model.
Yeah. Yeah, you're modeling for like, you know, little, like AT&T, like it's all commercial corporate stuff.
Well, that's good.
Yeah,
it pays the bills.
Yeah, that's the thing, yeah. It's fun. It's totally
so
fun.
So, you got done with modeling. Where were we? Why did we get on the modeling? We were talking about you and William.
You were talking about
About you and
you,
acting,
yeah.
How you started acting.
Yeah. So... Basically, yeah, I went to that movie. I loved it, fell in love with it, and I won a contest. I submitted my headshot for a contest.
She won a fucking contest to be an actress.
No, well, it was like, it was a membership to be on this auditioning site for a year.
Yes,
so,
I hate you right now.
Why?
You won a fucking contest to be like a movie star.
No, it was a raffle. It wasn't
You're
going to
be in Transformers
like,
5 based off a contest.
They drew my headshot.
Okay.
That's not really.
It was a raffle?
Yeah, it's not on merit. It was completely
random.
Hey,
by the way, that's how they casted the pilot I'm doing.
Just
the talk show host, they grabbed my name.
Hat.
It was like me, Chris Hardwick. They just put a bunch of names in the thing, and they go.
Chris Harrison.
Well, first they pulled Chris Hardwick and went too expensive. Then they got down to my name. And
right.
You know. Oh, you're just right.
Well, yeah.
The price is right.
So you win a contest.
So I just end up on this casting site, and I started getting phone calls, and I was like, well, what do you want me to do? And they said, read this. And I said, well, I graduated with an English degree. I can read.
Yeah, you can.
So
yeah,
I just kept reading things, and it just went from there.
Man, what these contests? Where are these?
No.
Are you kidding me?
I know.
I never win any contests.
These contests that require no talent or skill whatsoever.
Yeah. I never win any of those contests that change your life. I win the contests that are like, if you pay us $2,000, we'll hook you up with a timeshare in Vegas.
I know. Her contest is like...
That's a scammy contest.
Well, yeah. Well, everything's a scammy contest that I win. I don't win any legit contest.
I know. She gets the contest
like
where,
the podcast awards, which we lost the other night. We did lose.
We lost.
Yeah. We were losers along with Adam Carolla. Loser.
Yeah.
Loser Carolla.
See, I was banking on the apathy of most of
Marin didn't get any apathy.
And all that stuff.
Ruben's here. Ruben Fleischer is in the building. He is in the building.
So we lost.
Somehow we were relating all this to Gangster Squad.
Somehow, I don't know.
Oh, your Williams event.
I was talking about William. Yeah. Yes. So anyway, yeah, Paul will be on hand to talk about Gangster Squad and how he came to write the book and how the story's evolved and all the behind the scenes. Like,
so Paul's
the real
just trying to cash in off of this weekend.
Right.
Well, wouldn't you?
I mean, whatever. Yeah. No.
So to sum up, avoid the calzone at the Grove.
Yeah. Avoid the calzone at the Grove. Thank you, Lee. Very
so
good.
So safe.
Very good. Very good. I'm sure our listeners had a laugh.
Just one.
They don't have laughs at me, that's for sure.
Not plural.
Well, we're going to have Ruben on. I want Hillary to talk about this Williams thing, so who wants to go first? Who wants to sit out first for a minute?
Sure.
You want to do your thing? We'll do Hillary first, then we'll bring Ruben on. Caesar, you ready? Yeah, I'm live. No big whoop.
Yeah.
No big whoop. Just live here.
I'm Caesar.
I'm good. Keep going. Oh, let's create some more things. Let's create.
Let's do.
Let's imagineer it.
God damn it.
That's a word?
I thought I segued right into that.
I know.
Hi there. Ruben, how are you? I'm Matthew Aaron. Nice to meet you.
I'm Lee Capreas. Good to meet you.
And, no, that's fine. Just electrical equipment. It's no big deal. No, whatever. I'm not even going to worry about it. Zen. Buddha's Zen.
Buddha's
Zen. Don't worry about it. Yes, we are live on the air, and Ruben Fleischer, the director of Gangster Squad, in theaters this Friday, is joining us.
Thank you for having me on this exciting show.
I'm excited to have you on this show. This is a big deal to me. Of course, also the director of 30 Minutes or Less, Zombieland. You've done some things.
A few things.
And what I think our fans, our listeners, will care about the most is Robin Big.
Robin Big, yeah.
That is what everyone... See? What our listeners care about right there. So if you liked Robin Big, you'll love Gangster Squad. There is a plug.
Okay.
There you go. Yeah, Robin Big was like one of my first things. I met Rob and Big Black on this car rally across Europe called the Gumball 3000.
Oh, the Gumball. That's a famous thing.
Yeah, people know about it, and I was doing a documentary about it. And those were two of the participants, and they were just so funny that when I was editing the documentary, I thought it would be really fun to do a reality show with them. And, yeah, it was three seasons of hilarious.
And you did.
Yeah.
And you made more money off of that than anything you'll ever do ever again.
Because
that's a funny thing.
No, because it was on MTV. Yeah.
Oh, because it's MTV. I forgot. Yeah. Comedy Central, MTV, they don't pay. Let me ask you about Gangster Squad. I have a lot of questions, actually.
Bring them.
Bring it.
An homage to other gangster movies from the 30s and 40s? Would you say that's kind of fair?
Particularly Warner Brothers gangster movies?
Yeah,
I think it's like a classic gangster movie in terms of it's a full of Tommy guns and shoot 'em ups and good guys and bad guys. And it's just a really fun, entertaining, classic kind of gangster film.
So... let's talk about this, because when I was watching this movie, I was reminded of all these gangster films of the past, and I didn't know if it was on purpose or not, but one thing I will say is, for sure, if this film hits, which we're hoping it does, you probably reignited a genre.
We shall see if the spark
takes. That'd be kind of cool, wouldn't
I'd be thrilled. I mean, the movie I'm really proud of. I think it's awesome. Sean's, like, as great as any gangster I think we've ever seen. And I love rooting for Josh and Ryan to take him down. It's a classic kind of good versus evil type of movie. But we tried to make it to be one that relates to 21st century audience.
Yeah.
This isn't your dad's.
It does,
especially
the directing style and the cinematography, very relatable.
Yeah, we felt like we wanted to be modern and classic at the same time. For example, the car chase. I remember when I was pitching the studio, I was like, I want the car chase to feel like a Fast and Furious car chase.
It did.
It just happens to have 1940s
right.
Cadillacs.
You never see those cars getting busted up and stuff, you know.
Yeah, it's awesome because
car
it's
chase
so
was great.
Like, to get to blow up a car, 1940s Cadillac is a rare opportunity, but we blew up a few, and the gunfights heat was a big reference for the final shootout. Scarface, obviously, for the final shootout.
Untouchables, too, like with the staircase.
I mean, structurally, it's very untouchablesy as far as like. Putting together a squad to take down the bad guy.
Right.
And it's fun in the same way that Untouchables is. It's just a really fun movie.
Yeah, and you get that feeling watching it that it's all action. I mean, it's a big action flick.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because people are comparing us to, like, L.A. Confidential or The Godfather.
That's what I went going into it. When I went going into it, I go, oh, this is going to be, like, another, like, L.A. Confidential.
No, I mean,
it took me for a loop at first.
Yeah, no, this is pretty far from L.A. Confidential. That's more of, like, a drama. There's a mystery.
Yeah.
It plays out. It's long and laborious. But, I mean, I love the movie, but it's while they're both period Los Angeles films, this movie's
more gratification.
At its core, action movie, and it's filled with fights and shootouts and car chases, and also great performances by some of, I think, our most beloved stars.
Yeah, it's a huge cast. How much CGI did you have to use for the old L.A. look?
Tons.
Tons?
You know, if you drive around Los Angeles, you'll notice it doesn't look like 1949 anymore.
You didn't build sets at Warner Brothers or anything.
No, that's something I'm proud of. We shot largely on location.
Wow.
I'd say 95% of the movies takes place on location. The only places that we built were places that were impractical to shoot in, like an elevator or a bathroom or something like that. But
so what were some of the cool locations that L.A. people would know really well that are in this movie, that are featured in this?
Well, the final shootout takes place at the Park Plaza, which is an old hotel on MacArthur Park. It's currently vacant, so we kind of could use it as if it was a set and just, you know, shoot the hell out of it.
Yeah.
We have our introductory scene of Cohen takes place behind the Hollywood sign, but we actually shot that in a parking lot in Malibu with a big green screen because you can't really go behind the the Hollywood sign. We shot, I'm trying to think, the car chase took place out in like Thousand Oaks, Deep Valley. Slapsy Maxie's was an incredible...
I was going to ask about that.
Yeah. Slapsy Maxie's is this club that Cohen runs that Sean Penn has. And we found this block in Bellflower, which is about 45 minutes outside of L.A., and it's a nearly intact 1940s block.
Mm-hmm.
The stores don't have a lot of signage. They didn't put in any modern buildings. So we were able to just take the superficial outside and change kind of like what the stores were. And then the inside of Slapsy Maxie's was vacant, so we built that set on location. So that's why we were able to do the Goodfellas kind of shot where it goes from outside to inside without a cut.
The follow. The Marty Scorsese in Goodfellas, there's that scene where Ray Liotta and his wife walk into the club.
Yeah,
I noticed the homage to that. Yeah.
Call it an homage or a ripoff or a trying to be. But anyway, we definitely like... it's a unique opportunity where you can actually go outside inside, because typically that set would have been built on a soundstage, you know, at Warner Brothers, but because it was built on location, we could treat it like a real location, and the camera could follow Ryan as he walks right in there, and you feel like the excitement as he crosses the threshold.
Yeah.
And the place comes to life, and yeah,
you get the character of the club all in one shot.
Yeah, and then we see it again with Carmen Miranda at that
when
club.
She's doing the song on stage, and then
Chicka Boom.
Yeah, which reminded me of the song in The Mask. I don't know why.
Yeah, it did.
You distracted me with Jim Carrey there.
It was an homage to The Mask.
It was an homage to The Mask.
Well, that, yeah.
Another gangster film.
Cuban Pete, yeah.
Yeah. So we just got tons of them. Easter eggs for those paying attention. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Our Mask. The Mask doesn't get enough.
I think I remembered even an exchange that I saw in a Three Stooges short.
It's Laurel and Hardy, but you're good.
Oh, it's let's play Post Office. That's
yeah,
a kid's game, not the way I play it.
Yeah, that was line. Ryan brought that line to set. It was I think he said it was Laurel Hardy. Maybe it was Three Stooges, but that was a Gosling original contribution.
Yeah, well, we watch Stooges.
Did you encourage a lot of that contribution from the? I mean, you have these great actors. I got to imagine you encouraged, you know, their contributions.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I come from comedy where it's always like mm-hmm. improvisation and just trying to come up with the funniest thing at the time. So that's what I know. You know, so many of the great lines in Zombieland or 30 Minutes or Less were ones that the actors came up with on the day. And so I'm not afraid of it, that's for sure. I mean, this is a more structured story and like there's beats and plot points that you got to hit. But, you know, some of Sean's best lines, like Here Comes Santa Claus, was one that he just came up with on the day.
Yeah, that's good.
Like that.
Yeah.
What? This is your first, like, huge studio movie, right? Like,
yeah,
so
I mean,
what
it's
was...
not the hugest movie. There's still
no,
room to grow.
Right,
but, yeah,
but it's a big movie compared to Zombieland
in
30 Minutes or Less.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you do a movie of this scale and you're at Warner Brothers, and so... Was this like, did you spend more time on this movie than your other films? How much more preparation had to go into it? Was there more compromising with the studios you had to do?
Everything is, I guess, expands given the scale.
Yeah.
Although we didn't have that much more pre-production. I think it was the same amount of weeks as Zombieland in terms of the... studio, they were really supportive of us throughout the process. I mean, there was pressure, I think, just because of the cast and the expectations, but this is a movie that when we cut it and put it in front of an audience, like, it just plays great for an audience. Like, it's a real crowd-pleasing film, and so there's been immense support through the marketing, and I forget what else you asked me.
Oh, well, I was also asking you if you had to do some compromises with the studio that you may not have had to do in the past because you did smaller films. On a bigger film like this, are they a little tighter on you about what you can do and not do?
Not really. I mean, they were really, in hiring me to do this movie, I think they wanted me to kind of push myself to go further. You know, I wasn't the obvious choice to direct this movie. I have two, like, small comedies under my belt, and I'm doing a period action movie with, like, you know, Academy Award winners. But, when they saw it, they just wanted to push it further. They wanted the action to be more exciting. You know, they do, you know, the Nolan movies, they do some of the biggest movies there are. And so there's the bar is really high, and so there wasn't pressure in terms of like you have to do this or like they are really collaborative and respectful of their directors. They're it's a great place to work, but there's always just this expectation of like how can we make it cooler, how can we make it better, and just pushing you know the visual component of it as far as we can and making it really exciting. I mean they pride themselves on having made The Matrix and 300. And so they're really excited about, like, really, flashy visual kind of movies.
I thought, and I don't know if you'll agree with me on this, but I thought the score was fascinating.
The score?
And here's why. It's a good score. But here's why I thought it was fascinating. Warner Brothers is becoming a studio where I could tell it's a Warner Brothers movie from the score.
Yeah, they work with Hans Zimmer.
Yeah,
and
right.
He has a pretty defining sound to his his score. And Steve Jablonski, who was the incredibly talented composer who scored our film, is a Zimmer. He comes from the Zimmer camp. He's worked there for a while. I mean, he's his own composer. He's his own guy. But definitely trained under that. And I think that's the taste and the momentum and the drive that they like their action
movies. Now, is that someone Warner Brothers recommends
Definitely.
To you, or is that... Okay, so that is a... That I kind of felt like, yeah. Okay.
But well, what I love about
they put their
score,
stamp on it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they're a big studio. But But what I love about his score is I think it functions on two levels. It's like a driving action score. He does Transformer movies. Like,
sure.
That's what he's known for. But with ours, I think it has an authenticity to the period where... Hopefully the score is like the movie in that it works on two levels. It's like a nod to the past, but it also very much lives in the present.
It works.
And I think Emma Stone's another example of that. Like
she
has
great
the trappings
casting.
Of a femme fatale, but she's a very contemporary
it's
actress.
Great casting.
And it's like there's an access point for a modern audience. Like if we'd cast, you know, like I'm not going to name names, but I'm just saying like we try to have it be accessible for a modern audience and be this century's gangster movie. Because there hasn't been like a I'm not saying ours is a classic, but there hasn't been like a really successful, I guess you could say, gangster movie for a while.
Sure, sure. I mean, yeah. I mean, Nick Nolte was in Mulholland Falls, which didn't hit. And, you know, it's like a Western. They're hard to relate to a modern audience. Yeah.
Although
they're hard.
True Grit did an amazing job.
True Grit, Public Enemies.
You can kind of say Hatfield and McCoy's, right?
Yeah, you could say Django.
Open Range. Sure. So maybe, but that's what I was saying in the first thing I brought up to you. That's why I'm saying maybe this movie can bring back the gangster, the noir, the gangster, you know, kind of drama.
Well, I hope this doesn't sound too self-serving, and honestly, we'll all know the answer on Monday morning once the box office report has come in. But I think with Zombieland, Warner's felt with Zombieland, I kind of did something with the zombie genre in a new way, and I think there was a hope and an expectation that this might do the same for gangster movies.
Yeah. Well, what I love about their choice of you, without blowing you too bad here, but what I love about Warner Brothers in this situation is Warner Brothers took a guy who did Zombieland 30 minutes or less and gave you an opportunity to do this big scale gangster film.
Yeah,
and by the way,
right,
I think it's a crazy choice in a good way.
Good.
Those are the kind of choices the old studios used to make, the Don Simpsons, the Barry Dillers, the Michael Eisners, the guys from the 70s. Those are the kind of choices they used to make when Hollywood was fun and doing creative things and different things.
Yeah.
And
you're
I
right
think
about that.
That's the cool thing about Warner Brothers. I really dug that you got chosen to do this.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, having seen the movie, because I think a lot of people questioned it when I got the job, and I think there's a lot of curiosity to see how it ended up. And
sure.
Given that you've seen the movie and can say that, it means a lot to me.
Well, talent's talent, and I mean, listen, I'm an outsider looking in, but I know enough people in the business to know that if you got talent, you can do pretty much anything out here.
Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens this weekend.
Well, it kind of rings like an anniversary film for Warner Brothers, though, because they're in terms of their
tradition.
Yeah, their tradition and all that.
Yeah.
I mean, aren't they in their 80th year anniversary?
90th,
something like that.
And,
yeah,
they built their studio on gangster movies. Like if you walk down the halls of Warner Brothers,
right.
It's filled with the faces
of Cagney and Bogart, and that's
exactly.
That's the studio of Cagney, Bogart, all these people. And
those
Warren
classic
Bacall
gangster
and
movies of that era were kind of just genre movies. And this was intentionally kind of a throwback to that.
To that era.
This was more like, a classic genre movie. It's right. A crowd pleaser, you know.
I got a big vibe from that going in. It's just kind of harkening back to that era. I think you're totally right about that.
And there is a pride at Warner Brothers at having made this movie. You know, because like you said, they don't make these kinds of movies that much anymore.
No.
And they wanted it to be in that tradition.
People love those old ones too. Cagney, Public Enemy, and White Heat.
One of the greatest of that era came out in 1949, which is the year in which our movie takes place. Uh-huh. So like, there's a nice sort of echo of that. It's like an Easter egg, I guess, but on one of the marquees, White Heat is the movie that's playing. Like, so we try to acknowledge, you know, that
a lot of California in references too. Like,
yeah,
the Diet Burbank. Yeah, Burbank
we're
joke.
We're here in Burbank as we speak. Yeah.
Are you already working on the next project?
I decided to try and do some television.
Yeah.
So since Gangster's been finished, I've been working on television development, and this is kind of like the exciting / nerve-wracking time for TV development. I have 5 pilots that we did through 20th, and we're waiting to find out which of those will get shot or if any.
Wow. 5 of them. Are they also network? Are they set up at networks? Like they have deals at all the networks?
Yeah, we had 5 shows.
Because our pilot has no network deal.
Oh,
and
really?
I'm wondering. Well, Joe Carnahan and I decided to do it independently so we could shop it around, because I just don't think that's really done that much in television.
No.
So that's why I was interested in your deal that you have.
Yeah, basically I did a deal with 20th Century Television, I guess.
Yeah.
And they're kind of like the feeder for Fox Television. I partnered with writers. We sold 3 comedies and 2 dramas. And they are all just being finished written now. We had our first one go to the network today, and we'll keep doing notes and revisions, and they'll gradually make their way to the network, and then we'll see if any of them, I guess,
are you particularly rooting for one?
Well,
without saying anything about it, you don't have to say which one.
I'm rooting for them all, but there's a couple that I think seem like they're in the best standing. So we'll just have to wait and see.
Are you working with anyone interesting on these pilots?
Well, they're all very interesting.
Sure,
people,
in their own way.
But the only one that has cast attached is one called Dirty Blondes, and it's with Rachel Harris, who you know from The Hangover,
yeah.
I'm sure, mm-hmm. and then Angela Kinsey, who's on The Office. In real life, they're best friends, and it's kind of like a show about their friendship.
Okay, and then are you going to be directing any of these pilots?
Yeah, the hope would be
whichever one gets picked up, you can direct.
Yeah, and if there's more than one that gets picked up, then that's a good problem to have.
And are you like the sole producer? This is your deal, or are you working with someone bigger? Like for instance, once again, Carnahan, he's doing a pilot with Brian Grazer.
No, these are all, some I have partners with, like some of them there was another producer involved or blah, 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 but like for the most part it's through my, I guess, company.
And how did you find these scripts? You set up meetings with people?
Yeah, you just through the TV is a really cyclical business, like it's almost comical how routinely it follows this schedule, but in the summer writers kind of go around, they meet with different producers to partner with, whether it's like a big producer like Peter Chernin, who, has just such a track record, or a piece of talent, whether it's an actor or director like myself, where there adds value because, you can dangle the carrot, he might direct the pilot. So you meet with these different guys, you go pitch the shows. We pitched 6 shows, we sold 5 of them.
Wow.
They all are being written down, and we'll see if any of them.
That's pretty good, you know. That's
you
got to
be feeling pretty good.
Yeah, well,
they don't really feel good until it gets on the air, of course.
Yeah, but
the truth is, I get no money until it's on the air.
But
so
you got
like,
more chips on the table.
Yeah,
that's right.
You got more chips on the
table. People are looking at you.
Well, now they are.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. It could all fall to pieces.
Minor question. Someone I'm always glad to see in movies. I smile whenever I see him. How did John Polito get in this movie?
Yeah, I love John Polito.
Yeah, you got to love
Homicide.
John Polito.
Homicide,
like,
great.
Yeah, he's the best. I almost didn't cast him just because I love Miller's Crossing so much, and I was worried that people would just be like, ah, oh, just such so derivative of Leonard's Crossing, cast him in the same kind of part. But for me, this, again, is like that fine line between tribute and derivative. But for me, having Polito in that role, just there's no one better for that role.
Yeah.
So put the best guy in the part. And he happens to be one of the most amazing individuals. Like, I'm so glad to have met him and to now know him as a result of having worked with him. He's just the ultimate pro. And I guess not everyone knows Miller's Crossing, but that's when I've been asked a lot this past week, like, what's your favorite gangster movie? And I'm quick to always answer Miller's Crossing. It is such a great movie.
They just played it on a dual bill at the Arrow or something like that with Goodfellas.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that's a tough.
I wanted
tough
to talk about
to
a little 1990 throwback.
I wanted to talk about Paul Lieberman's book and how much you guys use. But can you switch with Hillary at least?
Sure.
So we can
sure.
talk about the Paul Lieberman thing.
Okay.
Hillary, get over here.
Yes, Hillary is going
the
to
Paul Lieberman.
Yes.
Expert?
Yes, she is a Williams expert, and that's, of course, where Paul Lieberman went to school. But Paul Lieberman, of course, wrote the book. It was the book, right?
No,
L.A. Times article?
It's kind of auspicious, the Paul Lieberman connection, because it was a series of articles written for the L.A. Times about the Gangster Squad, and I think that was the first time people really found out about these people and who they were and what they did. Everyone kind of knows Mickey Cohen, and the Hat Squad is a different squad, which is the one that was featured in Mulholland Falls. Like,
right.
Mm-hmm. And so this was the Gangster Squad, and they were actually called that, no matter how silly the name might be. And so his...
Well, we're assuming the cops didn't have the greatest names to come up with things.
There was a series of articles that Paul Lieberman wrote for the L.A. Times about these guys, the real-life John O'Mara, the real-life Jerry Wooters, the real-life Jack Whalen, and the real-life Mickey Cohen.
Josh Brolin, John O'Mara. Wow. He's always great, but yeah. I mean, wow.
So then the producer optioned those, Dan Lynn, our producer, optioned those articles, and then Will Bell, our screenwriter, was hired to turn them into a movie, and we use them very loosely as a launching pad for coming up with like a really fun and entertaining Hollywood movie. This isn't like Argo, where it's some kind of documentary about like the past. We definitely
nice Warner Brothers reference, by the way.
Yeah, there you go.
We took the people, the real names and the real people, but definitely created our own kind of movie archetypal characters and did a Magnificent Seven kind of take on the whole thing. And put in a black guy and a Mexican guy who definitely would have not been allowed
Michael
on the squad
Peña's
at the
great.
Time.
He's
Michael
great.
Peña and Anthony Mackie, two of the greatest actors.
They're great.
I'm so lucky to have worked with them. Peña, this was our second time working together.
He's amazing.
Two of the funniest people you'll ever meet. I worship both of them. Anyway, so we Lieberman's articles were like a launch pad, and he was a great resource throughout production as far as like
if
we had any
questions
about the real things. But that book hadn't been written at the time of our shooting, and so it was really just those series of articles.
Do the actors use Paul Lieberman, who's a historian on this, as a person to go to talk about these characters, or did they just stick with talking to you and Will? And
well, as the characters really are works of... I mean, Cohen wrote an amazing autobiography called In My Own Words, which I read and gave to Sean, and he read. And so for Cohen, I think that was the best reference point. For the actors, I don't know if they access Lieberman at all. One neat thing, though, because Paul does have relationships with a lot of the family of the original Gangster Squad, the real-life Jerry Wooters' sons came and visited the set.
Wow.
And the real-life John O'Mara's daughter came and visited the set, and they told us stories about their fathers. Jerry really was kind of a dashing guy in real life. He really did have, supposedly, before he married who would become the Wooters family's mom, he supposedly dated some mysterious redhead. And so they thought that was neat that Emma might subconsciously have just resembled that person. Mm-hmm. And then with O'Mara's family, I guess he was I don't necessarily want to talk about him because I'll get the story wrong, but I know that for his daughter, this movie was a way to reconcile with her father.
That's great. You're seeing Paul on Friday at an event. Tell Ruben about the event.
Paul is doing a Williams alumni event on Friday where he's basically having kind of a book signing and a, you know, chatting about the behind the scenes and how the stories all came to be and his whole role in it, and then sitting down with all the alums and doing kind of just, you know, a casual dinner and chatting about what he's up to and about the movie.
Great.
So yeah, it's very
that'll
cool.
That'll be great if you guys go see the movie beforehand, right?
Yeah, well, we do have to see the movie. They're not showing us the movie.
Yeah, you're going to have to go like in the afternoon, or else you're not going to know what the hell
he's talking
about.
What is that all about? Come on. No, it's going
to
be great.
So you got to go see it beforehand.
Yeah, no, I do now have to see it so I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, probably not a bad idea.
Let's be honest, though. What's the expectation for this movie to do over the weekend?
I'm not going to begin to state numbers. I just hope people come and see it. I mean,
has someone told you, if you don't state numbers, has someone said a word to you about it?
I've made three movies. The first one was an unexpected success.
Yeah.
The second one was a disappointing failure. And this one, I can say after those two experiences, I like it better when the movie wins than when it fails. And so I'm rooting for the movie.
Do people actually tell you when a movie is a success and a failure?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think you can pretty easily figure it out.
No,
yourself.
I mean, you could.
There's not a lot of mystery involved if
but
you're like, yeah, no one showed up to see it.
Well, listen, people make movies, and some of them don't make as much money as others, but then they get other jobs, and they make another movie that ends up being a hit. So maybe you're not looking at it as a failure, because maybe you're just like, I got a chance to make a movie, which very, very, very few people get to do. I'm blessed to be able to do that. I'm proud of it for what it is. And people didn't see it, but I'm proud of it. And I got another gig on Gangster Squad, which could be a huge hit.
Fingers crossed.
So the thing is, for me, it's like, do you have outsiders or people that work for you, people at the studios that say, this movie did really well, this movie not so much, because it is a business?
I mean, ones that I wasn't involved in?
Or ones you were involved in, either or.
Yeah, well, I mean, Zombieland cost $22 million and made $100 million worldwide.
Right.
So that's, I think...
So everyone wants to tell you how great
that
is, though.
Yeah, with 30 minutes or less, it costs somewhere between 25 to 30. I don't know where the final number came in at. And it made 37, I think, domestically. So it didn't lose money, but once you put in all the marketing costs, I think it's more in the red than the black. But
so you pay
like
attention to those kind of things, though, huh?
Well, I think as a person with aspirations in the business, you have to be conscientious of that, because if you make failure after failure, you don't get to make movies anymore. And like, I want to do this for the rest of my life. I have the greatest job you can possibly have, and I'm so lucky to have it. And I want to keep doing it for as long as I live. So
that's great.
With that being said, I think you have a if you're making studio movies that aren't art films, they're commercial enterprises, you have a responsibility to deliver successful films to the studio, because they're not making 30 minutes or less to lose money on it. They're making it because they want it to be a huge hit. And so, like, I think as a director, and I'm sure many directors don't feel this way, but I do for sure, and I'll be honest about it. I feel a responsibility to deliver a commercially successful movie.
Sure.
If this was an art house film, you know, and you're making an exploration of some man's last dying days or something like that, then that's a different thing. But these are...
Is that the John Sayle movie you're doing?
Yeah, that's the movie I'm doing. Yeah, that's exactly the one.
But for me, these are meant to be crowd-pleasing, audience-like getting movies, a zombie comedy...
At least
comedy.
You don't bullshit about it, though. You're not BSing about it.
You can't watch the movies and not appreciate those aspects of it. I mean, they're like, you know, even with Gangster Squad, like, the best version of the movie is one that if you go into it to see it and just know it's a fun, action-filled, throwback gangster movie.
Yeah.
And if you're expecting L.A. Confidential, then... you know, that's not what you're going to get. But if you go in expecting awesome performances, a lot of really fun action, and like an incredibly stylized film that I think is, and audiences seem to agree, very, very entertaining, I think it's a lot of fun.
I visit your website all the time, and you have a blog, which I find very interesting, because it's not... Ruben doesn't write like six-page long, like, blog
Misses.
Letters.
Yeah.
He's not you, Hillary.
Oh, I understand.
Sending out the newsletters. But you'll post interesting things that you find very interesting. One thing I found very interesting about you, though, was, and I've been following you for a while, is your start in the business. So So who was the first person to really believe in you, and who was the first person in the business to believe in you? Because I know those two things are separate. Because you talk about you racked up a lot of credit card debt. You just kept making like shorts after shorts and music videos after music videos. And you've worked with some great musicians too. But like, what was that journey like, and who were the people that believed in you?
Well, I got really lucky because I moved down here doing internet stuff, and the company I was working for went under. And through the network of people at my college, I knew Mike White. I went to Wesleyan, and he
enlightened.
Was
we're a little
enlightened
three.
Coming out in a few
so
weeks.
So exciting! Actually, this weekend.
Yeah, is it this weekend? So enlightened and Gangster Squad, you're set for the weekend.
Yeah, you don't need anything else. I knew him. Just he was older than me, but I knew friends who knew him, and he was working on Dawson's Creek, and I got a job being a PA on Dawson's Creek. Then he went and made this movie called Chuck and Buck that Miguel Arteta directed. He also went to Wesleyan. And I got a job being Miguel's assistant on that movie. It was a $200,000, very early digital film. I did everything from scouting locations to like being the guy who claps the clapper before takes to you name it. I mean, I made $200 a week. I worked 20-hour days. But for me, that was film school. I didn't go to film school. So for me, that was like my first time ever on a set, the first time really experiencing production. I fell in love with it instantly and just knew that was the world I wanted to be in. I worked again for Miguel on The Good Girl as his assistant again because it was an independent movie still, but it had a big enough budget that there were unions, so I wasn't allowed to touch anything, and I was his assistant. I didn't have much to do, so I got to just like, from that vantage point, watch everything, and I had incredible access because Miguel's incredibly generous, and got to kind of see how it all goes down, see how he worked with the actors. He was generous enough to include me in like storyboard meetings with his DP, like everything. He just was inclusive, and so after that, I was like, I want to be a director. I was like 26. I had saved up some money. I shot a short film called The Girls Guitar Club with Marilyn Rice Cubb and Karen Kilgariff.
Oh, I love Nick, Marilyn.
Yeah, she's the best. And Nick Swartzen actually was in it, as was Dave Gruber Allen and E from the Eels. And John Bryan did the score. It was like an amazing thing. Oh. And I put all my money into it, was convinced as soon as it was done I'd be getting movie offers and TV shows. And needless to say, that wasn't the case. I would beg people to watch it, and I couldn't get them to watch it. So I had to kind of start from scratch and just did really low-budget music videos. Like, my first music video was for my friend's band. We had a budget of $50, and I shot it and edited it myself and pulled a lot of favors from friends to help out with stuff, and it ended up getting played on MTV.
Wow.
And then from there, I just, like, kept making really low-budget music videos, this was over a course of about a year and a half, 2 years, was living off of credit cards, super stressed and bummed out. And then I made this one music video that we had a $7,000 budget for that was a rap video, but the rappers weren't available to be in the video. So I had to figure out how to make a rap video without any rappers. And I had this idea of them all being like mascots, like a tiger and a shark and a turtle. And I found these mascot costumes, and I found all these breakdancers on Craigslist, so I got to do it for free. And so I just had these rapping and breakdancing animal costume guys, and that became like a very early viral video. This was long before YouTube, but I put it on my website, and just my traffic went up. I ended up like having over $1,000 in traffic that month, and I had no money, and so that freaked me out. But it got seen a lot, and so I got signed by a production company to direct commercials, and
they call you up, the production company.
Yeah, it was like beyond my wildest dreams. Like the music video played at some film festival in London the next day. I mean, I was like working in like my house, like so bummed and stressed. And next day, I got after it played at this festival, six offers to be repped by production companies in the UK, including the one I ended up signing with for music videos. I was on the same roster as Michel Gondry, like my wildest dreams had come true.
And
a month later, I was in South Africa shooting a McDonald's commercial with Ronald McDonald, and like it just all ended up changing from there.
That's an incredible story. I have to say, as a Williams alum in Los Angeles, we are very jealous of the Wesleyan alums because there are so much more Wesleyan alums in film and TV than Williams alums in film and TV.
Are they smarter?
I don't know if I would go that far. No.
More successful.
They're
no, it's crazy.
There are more of them.
The Wesleyan Mafia.
Yeah.
For those that don't know.
Wesleyan Mafia.
No, it is.
Joss Whedon,
yeah.
Michael Bay,
yeah.
One of Kurtzman and Ortsy. I think Kurtzman.
One of them. Ortsy, Kurtzman.
I think Kurtzman.
One of the guys.
Kurtzman, Mike White, I already mentioned. Miguel.
Yeah.
Carter Bays, who created How I Met Your Mother. The list
goes
on and
about?
On.
Yeah, your school kind of sucks.
Yeah, we got a few.
You got John Sayles.
We got John Sayles, Gordon Clapp, and David Strathairn.
And don't forget
you know
Paul
what?
Lieberman.
And Paul Lieberman.
You need guys
and Paul,
like
and Paul
that,
Stupin,
too.
Who's behind Dawson's Creek as well, which you mentioned earlier.
Gordon Clapp should be in everything, by the way.
Gordon Clapp thought maybe he might be in Gangster Squad because he and Paul go way back, but didn't quite play out that way, huh?
Well... Way to make it awkward.
I know.
Always.
Right.
Let me ask you this.
Always.
Hillary has caused dead silence.
I was just kidding.
Let me ask you about this, though. I really have nothing to fucking ask you. I'm just stalling now.
Okay, I'm going to go then.
I'm getting back. Oh, you know what? I did want to ask you. So, okay. So, of course, I'm sure every interview you've done, everyone's brought up Aurora, Colorado, because it's their journalistic abuse. You know, you did a scene in Gangster Squad, movie theater shooting, whatever. Okay, anyone can go anywhere else and read about that. What I want to know is, do you miss that scene being in the movie? Do you miss any scenes being in the movie? Did you have to cut anything that you wish you didn't have to cut?
I was really proud of that Chinese theater sequence, and people who saw it really loved it. I feel like, in the end, though, the Chinatown scene that we replaced it with is actually even better. If I hadn't gotten the opportunity to do another one, I would have been thrilled with the Grauman's one, but there is an advantage of having a finished version of the film. I mean, at the time, it was like we couldn't imagine having to reshoot something, but having a finished version of the film, we could kind of reverse engineer the action sequence now that we knew the rhythm of the movie a little bit better. And so what we ended up putting in with the Chinatown sequence was a more suspenseful kind of ambush sequence that the Grauman sequence had a lot of Tommy guns in it, and it almost competed with the finale,
yeah,
which is also machine gun heavy. And so the new sequence kind of is great on its own, but it also allows the finale to be even bigger, which ultimately is better for the movie. So I miss that scene, but I think in the end, the new scene's just as good, if not better. And then there's a ton of scenes that will be on the DVD that are incredible, like some of Sean's best performances didn't make it into the film.
Like character building scenes that may have been, you already got something similar, so we can cut it
right.
for time.
Right, I mean, there's a backstory scene, or not a backstory, but there's a scene where Michael Pena contributes to the squad that's set in Chavez Ravine, which was where Dodger Stadium ended up being built. That visually is an incredible scene. There's a scene where Brolin and Penn face off with each other before the finale that took place in Olivera Street that's not in the finished version of the movie. So there are a few things that like were hard to let go of.
Yeah.
But I like short movies. Maybe I'm impatient. I don't know.
I'm with you.
But I feel like
you missed my Zero Dark Thirty review.
Oh right, yes.
One of the things about the movie, I think that when we, you know, showed it to audiences, that routinely they agreed was that the pace of the movie is really good.
It is.
And so sometimes you gotta question if you're sacrificing character or story, or if it's better just to keep it moving. And I guess in this movie, we decide to keep it moving.
No, the pace is great. Ruben, I want to thank you for doing the show.
It's my pleasure.
I want to wish you the best of luck this weekend.
Thank you. Fingers
I think
crossed.
You're going to be fine. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
I'm good at this, too, by the way.
I'm going to see
my
it. There's one ticket right there.
Yeah. My prediction
otherwise,
one
right
there.
Otherwise, going to be mad.
What else do I need to plug? Anything else? Oh, yeah. Well, no, I'm not going to break. We're done. I'm done.
The mugs.
Do the mugs real quick. Plug your fucking mugs.
Oh, boy.
Jesus Christ.
I meant for it to be a classic radio ad. All right.
Oh, here we go.
Are you looking for a perfect gift? We've got the perfect gift for you. SayNoToMugs.com, where you can find hilarious coffee mugs emblazoned on the surfaces with hilarious sayings like Merry Christmas, asshole, and I'm a miserable sack of shit. This is a real thing, $7.95 plus shipping and handling. I have to double check the actual price, but that is SayNoToMugs.com. Hilarious gift. Fortunately, the holiday season is behind us, but for the next holiday season.
Is there a website?
Yes. You're very cute.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
There is no website? You don't want
there
to plug
is.
The
I
website?
I said SayNoToMugs.com.
Oh, that was a real thing. That was a real thing.
This is a real thing.
I just snuck you in two plugs,
all
right?
Oh, God.
Okay, thank you, Ruben. Gangster
you
Squad this weekend,
so
of course,
fun.
And we wish you the best of luck on your 75 pilots this year. Hillary, thank you for joining me.
Thank you
best
so much.
Best of luck working with John Sale. Taste
thank
Chicago
you.
In Burbank. Here we are, 603 North Hollywood Way. That's good enough. Deep Dish Pizza, Joe Montaigne will love you for coming by. Thank you very much. Have a good one.